ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Natakoti Vaishnavindu ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur ki jai, Prem Shikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Praita Gadadhar Shri Vasa Vigora Bhakta Guru ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Kopina Shankani Radha Kani Giri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Natur Dham ki jai, Navadri Mai Kuram ki jai, Puri Dham ki jai, Gangamaya Jumana Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Guru ki jai, All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Guru. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stagana Shimati Bhakti Swami Chimali Namaste Sarasvati Gauri Vani Pachani Namaste Sangana Paskatana Satana Vanda Yam Sri Guru Sri Chakrabhati Shri Guru and Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sagana Ravinatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvitam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Ravita Shri Shakam Panchapal Pachumashta Kibisam Vyavitap Dijanam Padamayo Vaishnavam Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Jaya Chaitanya Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Jaya Chaitanya Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda June 15, 2014, in Zagreb, Croatia, and we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 4, 36 through, where should we go? 41. I fixed your fonts, by the way.
Sorry?
I fixed your fonts.
I don't know much about it.
Is this your computer?
Yeah.
I fixed it.
Oh, thank you.
I can show you how to do that if you want.
Yeah, wait.
Because it happens periodically that the fonts get messed up.
Asura-sambhara-anusaga-prayajana
The meter's really hard on this language. Emata-chaitanya-krishna-purna-bhagavan
Yuga
dharma pravartana netandra kama
Yuga dharma pravartana netandra kama
Please chant.
Evancha yaiche krishna prakatya karanam
Evancha yaiche krishna prakatya karanam
Asura samhara anusanga prayojanam
Asura samhara anusanga prayojanam
Imatta chaitanya krishna puna bhagavan
Imatta chaitanya krishna puna bhagavan
Yuga dharma prabhartana nahitam kama
Yuga dharma prabhartana nahitam kama
Evanchayaiche krishna prakatya karana
Asura samhara anusanga prayojana
Asura samhara anusanga prayojana
Imatta chaitanya krishna punam bhagavan
Siddhanta Chaitanya Krishna Purnama Kadana
Yoga Dharma Pravartanam Tandakama
Yoga Dharma Pravartanam Tandakama.
Evanchayachi Krishna
Prakatya Karana
Asura Samharanu Sangha Prayojana
Asura Samharanu Sangha Prayojana
Emata Chaitanya Krishna Purna Bhagavan
Emata Chaitanya Krishna Purna Bhagavan
Yuga Dharma Pravartana Nahitanta Kama
Yuga Dharma Pravartana Nahitanta Kama.
Evanchayachi Krishna
Pratyakarna Evanchayachi Krishna
Pratyakarna
Asura Samhara Anusanga Prayojana
Emata
Chaitanya Krishna Purna Bhagavan
Yuga Dharma
Pravartana Nakritanga Kama. Asura Samhara Purna Bhagavan Emata Chaitanya Krishna Purna Bhagavan Yuga Dharma Pravartana Nakritanga Kama Purna Bhagavan Emata Chaitanya Krishna Purna Bhagavan Yuga Dharma Pravartana Nakritanga Kama Religion of the Age
Pravartana, initiating, Nache, is not, Tanra, of him, Kama, the desire. Translation. Just as these desires are the fundamental reason for Krishna's appearance, whereas destroying the demons is only an incidental necessity, so for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, promulgating the Dharma of the age is incidental. Text 35. When the Lord desired to appear for another reason, the time for promulgating the religion of the age also arose. Thus, with two intentions, the Lord appeared with his devotees and tasted the nectar of prema with the congregational chanting of the holy name. Thus, he spread kirtan even among the untouchables. He wove a wreath of the holy name and prema with which he garlanded the entire material world. That's interesting. Not just the earth planet. Let's look at samsara is the Bengali. Okay, 41. In this way, this is text 41. In this way, assuming the sentiment of a devotee, he preached devotional service while practicing it himself. Purport. When Rupa Goswami met Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag, Allahabad, he offered his respectful obeisances by submitting that Lord Chaitanya was more magnanimous than any other avatar of Krishna because he was distributing love of Krishna. His mission was to enhance love of Godhead. In the human form of life, the highest achievement is to attain the platform of love of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya did not invent a system of religion, as people sometimes assume. Religious systems are meant to show the existence of God, who is then generally approached as a cosmic order supplier. But Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's transcendental mission is to distribute love of Godhead to everyone. Anyone who accepts God as a supreme can take to the process of chanting Hare Krishna and become a lover of God. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is the most magnanimous. This munificent broadcasting of devotional service is possible only for Krishna himself. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has taught the philosophy of surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who has surrendered to the Supreme can make further progress by learning to love Him. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement, propagated by Lord Chaitanya, is especially meant for those who are cognizant of the presence of the Supreme Godhead, the ultimate controller of everything. His mission is to teach people how to dovetail themselves into engagements of transcendental loving service. He is Krishna teaching His own service from the position of a devotee. The Lord's acceptance of the role of a devotee in the eternal form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is another of the Lord's wonderful features. A conditioned soul cannot reach the absolute personality of Godhead by his imperfect endeavor, and therefore it is wonderful that Lord Sri Krishna, in the form of Lord Gauranga, has made it easy for everyone to approach Him. Swarup Damodar Goswami has described Lord Chaitanya as Krishna Himself with the attitude of Radharani, or a combination of Radha and Krishna. The intention of Lord Chaitanya is to taste Krishna's sweetness in transcendental love. He does not care to think of himself as Krishna because he wants the position of Radharani. We should remember this. A class of so-called devotees called the Nadiya Nagaris or Gora Nagaris pretend that they have the sentiment of gopis towards Lord Chaitanya, but they do not realize that he placed himself not as the enjoyer of Krishna, but as the enjoyed, the devotee of Krishna. The concoctions of unauthorized persons pretending to be bona fide have not been accepted by Lord Chaitanya. Presentations such as those of the Gauranagaris are only disturbances to the sincere execution of the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is undoubtedly Krishna himself, and he is always none different from Srimati Radharani. But the emotion technically called Vipralamba Bhava, which the Lord adapted for confidential reasons, should not be disturbed in the name of service. A mundaner should not unnecessarily intrude into affairs of transcendence and thereby displease the Lord. One must always be on guard against this sort of devotional anomaly. A devotee is not meant to create disturbances to Krishna. As Srila Rupa Goswami has explained, devotional service is anukulina, or favorable to Krishna. Acting unfavorably towards Krishna is not devotion. Kamsa was the enemy of Krishna. He always thought of Krishna, but he thought of him as an enemy. One should always avoid such unfavorable, so-called service. Lord Chaitanya has accepted the role of Radharani, and we should support that position, as Swarup Damodar did in the Gambira, the room where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed in Puri. He always reminded Lord Chaitanya of Radha's feelings of separation, as they are described in Srimad Bhagavatam, and Lord Chaitanya appreciated his assistance. But the Gauranagaris, who placed Lord Chaitanya in the position of enjoyer and themselves as his enjoyed, are not approved by Lord Chaitanya or by Lord Chaitanya's followers. Instead of being blessed, the foolish imitators are left completely apart. Their concoctions are against the principles of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The doctrine of transcendental enjoyment by Krishna cannot be mixed up with the doctrine of transcendental feeling of separation from Krishna in the role of Radharani. So here it's explained that Mahaprabhu was inaugurating the Dharma of the age, or kirtan, incidentally to his desire to taste Krishna prema and to distribute Krishna prema. So he didn't come mostly to inaugurate the Yuga Dharma. Actually, that could have been done also by another avatar, and generally in most Kali Yugas is done by another avatar. But he came to have a special internal relishing and sharing, which is part of the Sankirtan, as Prabhupada has explained in these, Kaviraj has explained in these verses, that during Sankirtan, one is absorbed in this mood of separation from Krishna. One is this absorbed in this mood of devotion that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to experience. And that is how we should be chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada says, if you chant mechanically and just think about something else, then it is useless. Then he pauses and he says, or it will take a very long time. He says, when you're chanting, why can't you remember Krishna's pastimes like killing the Bakasura and the cowherd boys clapping? He said, otherwise, why are you reading Krishna book? So one should be going in Sankirtan in this mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The thing I really want to focus on here is this idea that so-called service that is not really pleasing to someone is not service, but is actually a disservice. And that if we really want to serve somebody, if we really want to serve the Lord, or the Lord's devotees, or anybody, then we have to understand what is their mood and serve them in a way that complements their mood. So I'm sure we've all had the experience, and I've had the experience, that sometimes I try to do something to serve someone, and it simply makes them disturbed. You know, and then sometimes I become disturbed. Well, I have good intentions. I wanted to please you. Why don't you just accept what I'm doing? And they'll say, well, I didn't want that. And then I've had experience with being the recipient of that. In fact, I think it was the last time I was here. It was one time when I was here in Zagreb, one devotee with a good heart gave me a great big glass bottle of olive oil. And I said, what am I supposed to do with this? I have one little suitcase that I carry on the plane. And they will not allow me, the airline will not allow me to take a big glass bottle of oil. Where will I put it in my suitcase? And then I was just disturbed. What do I do with this? I was visiting one temple where they gave me a beautiful, beautiful gift of a framed painting of their deities. But it was a very large painting, heavy frame. It must have been quite expensive. I'm guessing at least $200, $300 for a frame of that quality. But what do you do with that when you're traveling? How do you put this in your suitcase? Some big, huge picture of their local deities, you know, glass. And it was just, okay, well, it just became a problem for me. What do I do? What do I do with this? You know, many times people give me gifts like that, and they're just a problem. Okay, I want to give them away, but if I give them away to somebody in that temple, then they'll know I gave it away, and then they'll be sorry. And if I give it away to someone in another temple, then I have to carry it with me to that other temple. You know, one time, as I was leaving a temple, someone gave me a huge winter coat that she had made herself. It was huge, huge thing. I had to carry it with me all to the airport and through the airport and on the plane and off the plane and find somebody to give it to. And so while you appreciate that the person is trying to do something nice, it really is a disturbance. And one of the funniest, strangest experiences I had just a few months ago, you're not going to believe this story, but I promise you that this is a true story. So I was in one country, and after the class, one girl came up to me and said, I'd like to give you a DVD of some lectures of my spiritual master. And I said, my computer doesn't have a drive to play DVDs. I won't be able to watch it. And I know her spiritual master, but he's not a member of ISKCON. And so I figured that I couldn't take the DVD and give it to any of the other devotees, that nobody else would be interested in watching it. And I said, I can't watch this. I have no way to watch it. And she said, oh, please take it anyway. I said, but what will I do with it? No, I can't use it. And she kept insisting and insisting. Finally, she said, I want you to have it. I could understand. It wasn't about me, it was about her. She wanted to be able to say, I gave this to Rumila for whatever personal satisfaction she would get from it. So I said, okay. And then what could I do? All I could do was throw it in the rubbish. But there's nothing else I could do. I couldn't use it, and I couldn't give it away. So I told that story, just like I'm telling it to all of you, a month or two later in another country. And the very next day, again, you're really not going to believe this, but I absolutely swear that this is a true story. And the very next day, after my class, some gentleman came up to me and said, I have this DVD I'd like you to have. Mm-hmm. What is this? He says, this is some lectures given by an impersonalist guru, but I think you'll really enjoy it, even though he's a Mayavadi. So I'm thinking, okay. I was almost laughing because I thought this can't be happening. I just talked about this in the class. And now someone's doing the same thing. So I was very hard not to just laugh. And I looked at this man and said, I don't have a DVD player in my computer. I can't watch it. And he kept insisting. And again, it was of a Mayavadi guru, a Sankara follower. And I couldn't give it away. I wouldn't want to give it to anyone. And I kept saying, I can't use this. I can't use this. Give it to somebody else, please. And he insisted, and again he said, I want you to have this.
It was very strange. And again, I had to throw it in the rubbish. Or sometimes, you know, we all have this kind of experience, yes? Has anyone experienced this? As sometimes we try to do something for someone and they say, no, this is not what I want. And sometimes people do things for us and we're thinking, why are you doing this? This is not what I want. And sometimes people are very insistent. No? Whether it's giving you advice, whether it's giving you a gift, whether, you know, doing something for you that you just don't want. And sometimes they push it on you. My daughter-in-law said something very profound to me the other day. She said, you cannot force a connection with somebody. Krishna doesn't force a connection with us. We have our free will. Krishna says to Arjuna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, now I've explained all this, now do what you want. But generally what we do as conditioned souls is we try to force a connection with somebody to fulfill, frankly, our own desires. You know, we don't like to admit that, but really that's what's going on. And that's what lust means. Lust means, I mean, a gross form of lust is rape. So what is rape? Rape is I'm forcing you to fulfill my own desires. And really material enjoyment is something like that. You know, I'm trying to force a connection with you to fulfill my own desires. I'm trying to force something on you in the name of service. And this is done by parents to children. Has everyone had their parents do this to them? To try to push something on you that you didn't want in the name of love? Right. And husbands and wives do this to each other and friends. This is the general behavior in this world. Not all the time, but it's there. I want to serve you in this way. I've had one devotee in particular for a few years who was doing this to me. It was very disturbing. I remember one time I was sick and I said, can you get me some rice and yogurt and bananas in India? And she brought me pakoras. I said, I can't eat pakoras. I'm sick. She said, but it gives me pain to see you eating simple food. I said, who cares if it gives you pain? I'm not eating for your pleasure. I'm eating for my health. My eating is not about your pleasure. I had that experience with food also, actually many times, but one time in particular, where the devotees gave me about 40 or 50 preparations. And all the other devotees in the room only had khichdi and papadams. And I said, I can't eat 40 preparations at all. What to speak of in front of other people, and even children, and the children were looking at my plate. And it was terrible. It was just a horrible situation. And I said, you have to give this prasadam to everyone. And they said, we can't cook enough. I said, then don't give it to me. Oh, but we want to give it to you. I said, but you're creating a huge disturbance for me. I'm simply feeling upset. You're not making me happy. So this is very common. And in fact, this is, unfortunately, are the main dealings of a conditioned soul with the Lord. As Prabhupada points out in this purport, that most people who accept the existence and the supremacy of God go to him in a way that disturbs him. They go to him as an order supplier. Please do what I want. 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 And this is also lust. Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, for example, that those who worship the demigods, they're trying to get something that Krishna hasn't bestowed on them, that's not deserved by them, by the laws of nature. They're trying to get something they don't deserve. So this is also lust. And then they try to manipulate Krishna. Okay, Krishna, I'll say so many prayers. I'll offer you so many sticks of incense, whatever. You know, I'll do so much for you. And then you please give me what I want. And this is true with these Gauranagaris, where they're saying that Lord Chaitanya is the enjoyer. And they're saying, oh, we're going to be Lord Chaitanya's gopis. And we're going to enjoy a kind of a relationship with Lord Chaitanya. But that's completely disturbing his mood. His mood is not the mood of Krishna. I mean, sometimes he has a 21-hour ecstasy where he shows the mood of Vishnu. So occasionally, he assumes the mood of Lord Nrisimhadeva in Navadvipa, in the mood of Varaha in Navadvipa. But generally, that's not his mood. Generally, his mood is he wants to taste himself from the position of a devotee. That's what he wants to experience. He's not trying to experience something else. I had a situation about a week or so ago with one devotee with whom I have many different roles. So this devotee comes to some of my classes and I work with her on an ongoing basis as a teacher. And it's one of those classes where you get a certificate. You know, one of those sort of classes in this kind. So she has to do certain exams and I have to correct her exams and that kind of thing. So I have that role with her. And then also we have a role as friends, where I'm not the teacher. Two very different roles. And she would tell me, she said, you know, Armila, if you switch back and forth in the same conversation, it really disturbs me. It's like, because one moment I'm dealing with you that I'm your student, and the next moment you're dealing with you as I'm your friend. She said, can you not do that? Can you have one conversation with me as my teacher? Of course, I'm not a teacher all the time. I'm her friend all the time. I'm just a teacher, very temporarily. But can you, you know, if you're going to play the teacher hat, can you just play the teacher hat in that time, not mix it with friendship? Of course, Arjuna also had a problem with this when he saw the Virat Rupa. That when he saw the Virat Rupa, his mood of friendship couldn't be maintained at the same time. Of course, this doesn't happen for Mother Yasoda. When she sees the Virat Rupa, she stays in Vatsalya. She doesn't find us this kind of rasa-vasa, this mixing of moods. But in general, whatever mood the Lord is in, and whatever mood a devotee is in, that we should serve them in that mood, whatever their desires, whatever their mood, and not try to use them for our own mood, not try to impose our own mood on them. That is love as compared to lust. Lust means, I want to use you for my purposes. Love is, I want to facilitate your purposes. Now, you might say, if I facilitate your purposes, how will my purposes be fulfilled? And in material relationships, that is indeed a problem. If I'm simply trying to satisfy you and not thinking about myself, and if you're not also trying to satisfy me, then I'm going to end up frustrated. Now, if we're both trying to satisfy each other, then it works out just fine. I remember Ravindra Saruprabhu said that the Vedas don't talk about rights, they talk about responsibilities. Because if everybody does their responsibilities, then everybody gets their rights. Yes? Naturally. You don't have to think about your rights if everybody does their duties. So the emphasis was on duties. In the same way, if you're in a relationship with somebody, whatever it is, friend or spouse or parent or whatever it may be, and both parties are thinking about how to please the other and not how to please themselves, then everybody gets what they need. If I'm thinking about how to please you, you get what you need. If you're thinking about how to please me, I get what we need. I get what I need. And if we're both thinking like that, then we can actually forget about what we need. I've experienced this sometimes in working on projects where the leader of the project really took care of the devotees. I mentioned the other day how I had this experience of working on the Encyclopedia ISKCON to get money for the temple in Mayapur. So that was a project where the needs of the devotees were completely taken care of. I mean, our physical needs, our room, our prasadam, our laundry, the needs we had for our service, the equipment that we needed, was just all provided. And the devotional atmosphere in the temple was very wonderful. And anything that we needed for our service or anything we needed for our sadhana or anything we needed for our bodily maintenance was provided before we even knew that we needed it. I mean, it was just there. It was some of the most expert management I've ever seen. And because of that, when I was there, I was able to focus on my service for 14 to 16 hours every day. I didn't have to worry about anything. Everything, all my needs were taken care of by the devotees in charge of the project. So therefore, I could just worry about the project. So they were worrying about me, and I was worrying about the project. And everybody was happy. And it was, the project itself was very wonderful for me as an individual with my particular psychological nature. And I felt completely happy and fulfilled. Completely. Completely. I mean, 16 hours a day wasn't enough. I wished I could have worked, you know, all the time. It was such an enlivening service. So the service itself was enlivening, and that fact that I could focus on the service. So there are people in business who understand this, not many, but there are some who understand that if you take care of your people, then they can just focus on the goals of the business. And if you don't take care of your people, then they have to worry about taking care of themselves. And this is the same, you see this sometimes in families also. Yeah, it's unusual, but you see it sometimes. Where the husband is just thinking about how to please the wife is just thinking about how to please the husband. And then nobody has to be selfish. Nobody has this urge. Of course, materially speaking, this is not going to be absolutely satisfied. Because even if I'm only thinking about how to please you, I will never please you fully on a material level. Nor will you ever please me fully on a material level. So in a material relationship between two conditioned jivas, there's still going to be some frustration. There's still going to be some feeling of, well, I need this that I'm not getting, because no other jiva can fulfill all of our needs. It's just simply impossible. Like this computer battery cannot supply all the electricity for the temple. But still we can understand this principle whenever we've experienced any kind of relationship like that, how it works. So this is the mood between the Lord and the devotees, that the Lord simply thinks about how to please the devotee, and the devotee simply thinks how to please the Lord. That's what love is. That's what love is. And especially when the person you're trying to please is the Lord, there's no question about whether or not he can fulfill all of your needs. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 2:45, Niryo Vikshema Atmanam, be fixed in the self and forget about what you have and forget about what you need. Why? In 9:26, Yogikshema Vahamyaham, I'll take care of it. I mean, Krishna is the perfect employer, the perfect husband, the perfect father, the perfect everything. And he will take care of whatever we need. We don't have to worry about that. We only have to worry about his service. Of course, part of worrying about his service may mean providing for the family that Krishna is giving us. Part of worrying about his service, it may be, you know, making sure we have enough clothes. That's part of our service. But we're worrying about it in terms of our service, not in terms of our own maintenance. It's a little different mentality. And so in order to do this, of course, we have to understand the moods of the Lord. It's interesting here that Srila Prabhupada focuses on the word anukulena from the verse where Rupa Goswami defines bhakti. Anyabhilasita shunyam gyanakama anavartam anukulena krishna anushilanam bhakti uttamam. And Adi Purusha Prabhu, a few months ago in Slovenia, was speaking on this point, that the most important word in that verse of Rupa Goswami is anukulena. That it has to be with the desire to please Krishna. And if things are done with the desire to please Krishna, frankly, everything else will be adjusted. All other material desires will leave. One will no longer be covered by jnana and karma, and one will act with body, words, and mind. Those will all follow naturally if you're trying to please Krishna, to get that intention in everything you do of trying to please Krishna. So that is really just how to be a bhakti yogi. How do you chant japa? How do you chant in the kirtan? How do you cut the vegetables as you're older? You know, how do you do everything? How do you work at your job? How do you take care of your family? With the intention to please Krishna. Whether or not Krishna will be pleased by this action. Well, of course, to do that, you have to know what pleases Krishna. And when you go a little deeper, you have to know what pleases different incarnations of Krishna. What pleases different incarnations of Krishna in different moods. So for that we have the Shastra. Therefore Prabhupada would say to know God and to love Him. To know God and to love Him. You cannot love God unless you know Him. And we're not talking here about just some kind of jnana or even vijnana on the personal platform. We're talking about getting to know Krishna as a person. Really meditating on Him as a person. So if you want to please Lord Chaitanya, then you'll see that He's in this mood of Srimati Radharani. That's why you like to listen to various songs like Gita Govinda, You know, because these are songs written in Radharani feeling separation from Krishna. So he would meditate on these verses. I mean, Lord Chaitanya liked to read the whole Bhagavatam. He enjoyed reading about Dhruva Maharaj, Balaji Maharaj, with Gadadhar Pandit. But it was said here, Prabhupada is explaining, that Swarupa Damodara Maharaj, Swarupa Damodara Goswami, he could pick up on the Lord's mood. Oh, the Lord is in this mood of, where is Krishna, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And so he would read a verse from the scriptures or from the acharyas of, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? He would read something that augmented his mood. I'm thinking also many times when we try to counsel and help people, we try to get them out of their moods, don't we? Like if somebody's sad or angry or something, we just try to change their mood. Oh, don't have that mood, have a different mood. But it's quite interesting, even according to psychology, mundane psychology, that doesn't work. That if you want to help somebody, first you get into their mood. Maybe not yourself, but first you relate to their mood, first you're empathic with their mood, and then, if necessary, you can help them go someplace else. When we have a particular mood, what we want is understanding and connection, isn't it? We don't want someone just to come and tell us that's not the right mood. We want someone to understand us. So the Lord is like that also. We find this happened with Madhavendra Puri and his disciple Ramachandra Puri. When Madhavendra Puri was dying, he was leaving his body. He was lamenting, oh, I have not attained Mathura, I have not attained Mathura. And Ramachandra Puri just tries to get him out of that mood. And he goes to him and says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanadman Sochitina Kanchati Samasarvesha Bhutesha Madhavati Mabhate Puri. Why are you lamenting? Be fixed in Brahma. And Madhavendra Puri said, get this person out. I don't want to die seeing his face. So even in our ordinary human dealings, this is not always desired. It's not always desired. If you take courses in counseling and psychology, they'll tell you, you know, first relate to the person in their mood. First create empathy. And then from there you can go on. So this is the same thing when we're dealing with the Lord. What is the mood of the Lord? What rasa is the Lord desiring to taste in this pastime? What is He trying to enjoy? Let me facilitate His enjoyment. What does He like? You know, in the beginning of bhakti, this is just very simple. Like, okay, I'm going to offer vegetarian food and not meat, fish, and eggs, kind of thing. You know, I'm going to offer flowers that have a fragrance. If I offer incense, I'm going to offer a flower. You know, in the beginning, we just kind of read the rules from the Nectar Devotion, and we say, okay, this is what Krishna likes, this is what Krishna doesn't like. And some of the things Krishna doesn't like are very hard to understand. Why does Krishna not like one-handed obeisances? I don't know. I really have no idea. Why does Krishna like circumambulation in one direction and not circumambulation in another direction? Who knows? I'm sure there's a reason, but you know, we may not necessarily know the reason. But that's what Krishna wants. Okay. That's what Krishna wants. And as we progress in Krishna consciousness, it shouldn't be so much just a reading of the rules. Okay, it says this in the Shastra and I don't understand it, and just some rule. When I was just in Split, one very nice man who's new to practicing Krishna consciousness. He says, there seem to be so many rules and regulations in Krishna consciousness, and every day I learn new ones. You know, what are the most important ones? I'm a little overwhelmed. So in the beginning, it's like that. You're just reading all these offenses, and offenses to deity worship, offenses to the holy name, offenses to the dumb. And, okay, I have to do it this way, and I don't know how to do it that way. How do I put my fingers on my beads, and how do I tie my doggy, and what's the, you know, oh, don't put that on the floor, you know, okay, don't touch prasadam with your left hand, you just get more and more and more, isn't it? Yes? But after a while, one should really progress from just being overwhelmed by these lists of rules and starting to relate to Krishna as a person. And what mood is Krishna in? Of course, we might want to make, just very briefly, a little bit of an esoteric point here. that these persons who try to become gopis with Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu doesn't have gopis. When Krishna is in Mahaprabhu, he's not enjoying with gopis. When Krishna is Mahaprabhu, he's a sannyasi. He's just married and then he takes sannyas. In fact, he was very, very distant from women. They have to offer obeisances from a distance. And even there was one devotee who came in and said that his wife had also come. He didn't even call her by name, actually. He called her by the mother of his son. I forget what his son's name was. Like, you know, Madhava Mata, like the mother of Madhava has also come. I forget his son's name. And Prabhupada notes that Lord Chaitanya felt a little uncomfortable, even hearing the indirect name of this woman. But out of affection for his devotee, he didn't complain about it. So Lord Chaitanya was so strict like that. I mean, of course, there were some unusual pastimes where that woman climbed on his shoulders to see Lord Jagannath and he didn't mind. But generally, he was very, very strict like that. So there's no question that Lord Chaitanya was having some sort of dalliance with gopis. That wasn't his mood at all. But it may be possible for a devotee to awaken conjugal feelings with any incarnation, just like the sages who saw Lord Ramachandra. So Lord Ramachandra also, and he was not in this mood of accepting many women. That was not his mood. He took an ekapatni vrat. His brothers did it, but he did. That was his explanation to Sri Panika. He said, I have my wife here. I've taken a vow to only have one wife. He said, but my brother Lakshman was also married, but his wife was back in Ayodhya. He said, my brother Lakshman is here without his wife. He could accept a second wife. So there were sages in the Dandakaranya forest who, when seeing Lord Ramachandra, had Madhurya Ras awaken in their heart. We all know this? Everybody's familiar with it? So this is explaining that the gopis who danced with Krishna came from different groups. So this is, Prabhupada explains this in Krishna book and in many other places, but it's in Krishna book. That some of the gopis dancing with Krishna in the Rasa-lila had come from the spiritual world. They were Krishna's eternal associates. And some were jivas who had become perfect from the material world. And among these jivas who had become perfect from the material world, there were some groups. Some had come in groups. And there were two prominent groups. One was the personification of the shastras, the personalities who are in themselves different shastras. So many of them became gopis in Krishna's lilas in the material world who joined his eternal entourage. And another big group were sages who had met Lord Ramachandra. And when they met Lord Ramachandra, the Madhurya Ras, the conjugal Ras, desire for conjugal Ras, awakened in their heart, even though they could not enjoy that with Lord Ramachandra. So any incarnation may awaken a rasa in somebody. But one has to know whether or not that rasa can be enjoyed directly with that incarnation, or whether it's to be enjoyed in another incarnation. Does that make sense to everybody? Everybody understand that point? So just because your desire for Madhurya Rasa is awakened by Lord Ramachandra doesn't mean you can express that with Lord Ramachandra, because that would be a disturbance to Lord Ramachandra. Ramachandra is not in that mood. Ramachandra is in the mood of very extreme dharma. Very, very extreme. To the point that he banishes his pregnant wife when there's one complaint, that he gets exiled to the forest because of his father's promise. We don't see this kind of extreme adherence with other of Krishna's incarnations. We just don't see it. We see Vamandev Chalayasi Vikramame. Chalayasi means you cheated. So Vamandev cheated Bali Maharaj. He pretended to be something else. So we don't see this sort of... or Nisingadev, who follows the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. Nisingadev said, okay, I didn't kill you on the inside or the outside, it was a doorway. I didn't kill you with day or night, it was the twilight. I didn't kill you with anything living or dead, I killed you with my nails. Ha ha. You know. So Nisingadev, he was following the letter, but not the spirit. Ramachandra was following the letter and the spirit. I mean, he was like, no, I'm going to have just one life. Even when Sita entered the earth, he didn't take another life. So the sages at sages at the Dandakaranya forest, they had to wait to be with Krishna to exhibit that. So it's very possible that somebody who's worshipping Lord Chaitanya would have this awakening of a desire to have Madhurya Ras with Krishna. And they could experience that to some extent in the exchanges of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, who are talking about Madhurya Ras, but they can't experience that Madhurya Ras directly with Lord Chaitanya, because that's not his mood. That's not his mood. So there are these kind of concoctions where people just, you know, make up something. And either they make it up just out of their brain, or they make it up on the basis even perhaps of some kind of spiritual experience that they have. In fact, I heard about one of my godbrothers who did this. He had some kind of spiritual experience, but then he didn't consult with anybody, and he made up his own process of worship, something very similar to these Ramananda's, not the same, but something quite similar, where he was saying that one should worship, I don't want to get into the details because it's actually really disturbing, but he wanted to worship a particular incarnation of Krishna in a way that's not appropriate for that particular incarnation. And he made up his own system. And eventually he fell down and became a Buddhist. So one should be very, very careful. Prabhupada is talking here about that these Gauranga Nagaris, they're doing a disservice. They're doing a disservice. Exactly like when someone gives me a big framed picture, you know, right before I get on an airplane, they're doing me a disservice. They're not doing me a service. They're giving me a problem to take care of. They're not doing something that's nice for me. Then it becomes, you know, this huge winter coat as I'm getting on the plane. And, you know, I have to carry this thing around with me for the next 10 hours before I can figure out what to do with it. So it's just a problem. And in the same way, if we try to do service without reference to the scriptures, which is what Prabhupada's talking about here, it becomes a disturbance. It becomes a disturbance to the Lord, and it becomes a disturbance to society. So this is true on any level of bhakti. This is true on the level of Vaidhi bhakti, and it's true on the level of Raghunuga bhakti. I hear Prabhupada's talking about Raghunuga bhakti. But it's true on any level, that you cannot make up your own process. Everything should be, even though Raghunuga is spontaneous, still, it has to be done in consultation with Sadhu Shastra Guru. You can't just make up your own process. And you can, but then it's not going to be pleasing. It's just not going to be pleasing. If somebody just makes up in their own mind what you like, it's not going to be right. They have to ask you, or they have to ask somebody who knows you. Otherwise, it's very likely to be a disservice. Of course, we can say that it's said that the best servant knows what to be done without being asked. But the implication here is that this first-class servant really knows the mind of the master. Really, really knows the mind of the master. It's not simply that they're acting out of their own sense gratification and their own desire. So we should understand what is Mahaprabhu's mood. What is the mood of Sankirtan? What is the mood that Mahaprabhu brought to Sankirtan? How are we supposed to be entering into the chanting of the holy name? How are we supposed to be serving the Lord and his devotees? What do they like? And then that is love. Love is not a very complicated thing in that sense. Love is doing what the person you are loving wants, in the way that they want, in the time that they want, according to their mood. And also, you know, I may want something at one time and not want that very same thing at another time. So knowing what are the Lord's moods in different incarnations, knowing what are the Lord's moods at different times, knowing what are the... This is, in fact, this idea of time and place and circumstance is one of the main themes, shall we say, in distinguishing the different modes of nature as given in the Bhagavad Gita. So very often when actions are described in goodness, passion, ignorance, one of the main differences will be, is it the right time and place and circumstance? The things done in the mode of ignorance are often, they're good things, but they're done at the wrong time. They're done in the wrong circumstance. They're done at an inappropriate time, inappropriate circumstance. So what does Krishna want? What does Krishna want when? And if we don't know, then we need to consult. In fact, we should be regularly consulting. You should be regularly consulting. Even in the spiritual world, people are consulting. This is happening even in Goloka Vrindavan. What does Krishna want? Oh, what does Radharani want? Oh, no, she doesn't want this now. Now she wants it. And the devotees were very expert in understanding each other's moods. Like Swarupdhamadhar here is a manifestation of Lalita. Lalita was very expert in understanding Srimati Radharani's moods. So that's really what bhakti is about. And just imagine if everybody did that. If we had a society where everybody was putting their energy into understanding the personality and the moods of everyone else and trying to satisfy them, that would be a wonderful society. Wouldn't we want to live in that kind of a society? Where everybody was just thinking, how can I please somebody else? That is the spiritual world. That is the spiritual world. So, questions, comments? Corrections? Yes.
I read in connection to Bhakti Devi something that I didn't understand. I actually, from Vishwanath Chakravarti, about Bhakti Devi. He was explained like from Krishna come three energies, Samvit, Sandini, and Hladini. So Radharani is the queen of Hladini Shakti, a personification of Hladini Shakti, and then she expands into three gopis. Bhakti Devi, something like that, but I didn't understand.
I have to see the reference, because...
Because I'm not sure...
I don't remember reading that. When first you started talking, I thought, oh, maybe that's from Madhurya Kadambini, but it's not. Uh-huh. So, it doesn't sound like something I personally read. I haven't read anywhere near all of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's writings.
Okay.
You know, he's written a whole commentary on the Bhagavatam. I've read parts of that, but I haven't read all of it by any means. I'm not sure if I've read all of his books. I think so. I think I've read all the books by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but I certainly haven't read all of his commentaries. And what you're saying doesn't click as something that I recall reading. So I just don't know at all, Prabhu. I'm very sorry.
What information do you have about Bhakti Devi as a person? Because we mentioned them.
Not very much. And I've wondered about that myself. Not very much. You know, you don't find, like in the places where Vrindavan Leela is described, she's not mentioned. I mean, you know, there's mention of Purnamasi and Vrindadevi, and then there's all different other personalities, you know, a personality of music and a personality of sleep and a personality of shyness and a personality of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really not mention of Bhakti Devi as a personality very much, unless somebody here has some more information. I think that's a question for somebody who's really a scholar in that area, which is not me. And, you know, if you could find the reference, I could try to find out more information for you. But I've wondered that myself, because, you know, she's mentioned as a goddess, as a transcendental, not in the material world, but as a transcendental goddess and a specific personality. But we don't really hear much. Timur Krishnamurti wrote about Bhakti Devi as a personality in his drama, Prabhupada Anchalila. It's been years since I've read that, and I don't remember the specifics. And I'm not sure if he mentions where he got that from exactly, but he does mention it has some role for Bhakti Devi to play in that drama. But it's something I have wondered about myself as well. Not intensely, but I have wondered, you know, who exactly is she, and what exactly does she do, and what's her role in the Leela, and what is she like? I mean, one thing I've noticed also in those kind of literatures is that generally only the very, very prominent persons are described. Generally. Like Rupa Goswami has this book, Radha Krishna Vanagesh Deepika, where he describes so many of the residents of Vrindavan, you know, Nanda Maharaj's brothers and uncles and grandfathers and, you know, all these things. But often it's just a phrase. so-and-so is Yasoda's sister-in-law. And that's it. You know, there's... one devotee was asking me the other day about Vatsalya Ras and what the descriptions are in Vrindavan of the other devotees at parental Ras. So there, I found one mention, one, in all of Prabhupada's books and lectures in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about one of Krishna's nurses. One. And then there's another description in the Radha Krishna Ganadeshipika of Rupa Goswami of that same personality. But that's all there is. There isn't anything else. So if you want to know, you know, something about this person and what they do, the information just isn't there. So that's also the case with many of these personalities. They may be mentioned once here or there, just like we have in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in Srimad Bhagavatam, lists of devotees. Right now I'm reading in the ninth canto, and there's chapter after chapter in the ninth canto, just lists. This person's son is this, and this person's son is this, and this person had three sons, and this son married this person, and they had two sons. And sometimes it's just a name. And sometimes it's some very brief explanation. There's this person who did so many yajnas, and that's it. And if you wanted to know more about them, the information really isn't there. But if you find anything more, I'd like to have it because I'd be curious myself. Maybe that's one of those things like Prabhupada wrote to Ekayani, where he said, better you chant Hare Krishna, go to Goloka Vrindavan and see for yourself. there are definitely some questions where that's the only answer to give because there just isn't a lot of information sometimes. I mean, you know, our tradition gives more information about God than any other tradition in the world. But as Prabhupada said, there's more volumes of the Bhagavatam on the higher planets. And we have so much information that we could be producing a newspaper at every moment. So there's unlimited more information than what we have even in our extensive literature. Much more to find out. There's a nice explanation given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur of Ladini Samvit and Sandini, which I've compiled into a little chart, but there's nothing there about Bhaktivinoda. Anybody else? Yes?
When devotees are more spiritually advanced, they need less things. So it's like I'm speaking in general, not only about you. So if you want to please them, if you want to do something for them, it's very hard to find what to do for them. So is there something general? Is there something...
I don't think that's a question of spiritual advancement. I think it's a question of your particular service. What you need and how many things you need. You know, you could have a very, very advanced devotee that was running a country and had lots and lots of things. Just like Pundarik Vidyaniti. He was a Prema Bhakta. He had many, many things. So, you know, there are plenty of Mayavadis who walk around with, you know, naked without even a water pot. So I don't think that the number of things you have or the number of things or the kind of things that you need are directly have any direct relationship to advancement. And what was your second question?
I was speaking more about sannyasis or brahmacharis.
Okay. Like people who are in a renounced order.
Yeah.
How do we know what they need? Well, why don't you ask them?
But usually it's like... I don't need anything in this.
Well, then everybody can use some nice sangha. Everybody can use somebody who talks to them about Krishna. That's always one thing. Even if somebody has everything, if you go to them and say, wow, guess what I read today? So like this morning, I'm reading through Nectar Devotion. I'm at the point where Prabhupada's talking about perspiration as a sattvika bhava. And he mentions that Radharani was perspiring but blaming the sun, but actually she was perspiring out of a desire for Krishna. And then that... Was it Garuda who was perspiring when Krishna was fighting with Kali? I think so. Out of anger. because he couldn't do anything to Kaliya. But the other example really struck me. It was about Krishna's servant, Raktak, that Krishna had dressed up as Abhimanyu, Radharani's so-called husband. And when Raktak saw Krishna dressed as Abhimanyu, he started insulting him. Now Raktak is in Dasyaras, he's a servant, and he would never insult Krishna. Krishna's coward boyfriends will insult Krishna. They'll say, Krishna, you didn't really lift Govardhan Hill. We were all helping with our sticks. You know, so they'll insult Krishna. Of course, the gopis will insult Krishna. But the servants don't insult Krishna. So here, Raktak had inadvertently insulted Krishna in the form of Abhimanyu without realizing it. And so he felt fear and he started perspiring. So what really struck me this morning in reading that pastime was how Krishna was relating with his servant. That Krishna put his servant into this position where he transgressed his normal behavior and then felt fear. How funny Krishna was to do that. So did you enjoy hearing that? Did you like that? Did you all like that? Everybody like that? So you can give that to anybody. If there's someone in the Krishna Consciousness Movement that doesn't like that, then I don't know if they're really in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. I didn't give to anybody. Read something from Prabhupada's books and share it. You don't have to go on for an hour about it. Another thing you can give to everyone is just your enthusiasm and your happiness in Krishna consciousness. It's wonderful to be around people who are enthusiastic and happy in Krishna consciousness. Even if they don't give you anything, per se. But that's a great gift. And that you can give to anybody. You don't even have to say anything. Just be happy in Krishna consciousness and be enthusiastic in your service. It can be as simple as, wow, this is nice prasadam. That's a gift to be around people like that. Frankly, especially for the traveling preachers and the sannyasis, because that's not what most people give them. Most people, oh, I have this problem, and I have this problem, and I have that problem, and I have that problem, and this problem, and that problem. And it's very rarely, you know, I have a problem falling in love with Krishna. It's usually I have a problem with money, or I have a problem with my wife, or I have a problem with my child, or I have a problem with my health, or, you know, I haven't chanted my rounds for the last 4 years, or something like that. It's usually that kind of problem. And it's so wonderful if you have somebody who's just sweet. And sometimes you can also ask them what they can use for their service. Like if I create a PowerPoint for a seminar, I know there are certain preachers that like to have them, so I share them with them. Or I just recently got a new translation of that Vanu Swami has done. And then he had it in like, I don't know, 20 different files. That's usually how he does things. So I combined it into one file, and then I put it in Unicode for e-reader, and I formatted it. And then I couldn't do any more with it. I got kind of stuck. So I contacted a devotee who's expert with computers and with fonts. And then he finished formatting it and put everything. I mean, he just did a beautiful, beautiful job. And we even Unicoded the footnotes. And then I just gave it to about 10 or 15 different preachers. And they were all so happy. I said, here, it's formatted to go on your computer and your e-reader. It's a new book just came out. So I know that, and they were all so happy. That kind of thing you can give to someone even who doesn't want any material thing. You know, and of course, if there's some renounced person who's working on a project, you can find out what project they're working on. You can give a donation for the project. You can offer some voluntary service for the project. I mean, that's also always wanted. Most of the renounced devotees are working on something. Or if it's even some brahmachari in the temple that doesn't have some project, maybe you can help him with his service sometimes. Find out what service he's doing. Another gift you can give to people, and anybody, give this to anybody, is to really notice them and notice their service and give them some feedback, some positive feedback based on their service. Not in a vague way, not, oh, you're such an advanced devotee, you're such a sincere devotee. I mean, that's not really worth much of anything. But if you say, oh, Maharaj, you know, I looked at the book you published, I really liked the layout, I really appreciated the cover design, and, you know, it was so easy to read, it was easy to find, you know, like that. And I was recently talking to one devotee who works on editing and publishing her spiritual master's books, and she said how that when she visits temples, they get annoyed with her because she's spending so much of her time working on that project and not working on the local service, and they just criticize her. And she was saying, one temple she was saying, some devotee asked her, so what are you doing? Oh, I'm editing my Guru Maharaj's book. And then the next day, well, what are you doing today? As if she was going to finish the book in, you know, an hour. So to take some time to find out what people are doing. People like to talk about their lives and themselves and their projects and their interests. And talk to them about that. Wow, it's so wonderful that, you know, you've been going on Harinam every week for the last 10 years. And talk to them, find what they're interested in and talk to them about that. Most people, when they talk to us, they talk about their interests, not our interests. Isn't that a fact? I mean, I'm always shocked if people talk to me about my interests. And usually I'll say, do you really want to know about this? Because it's so shocking that anybody cares about what interests me. That is another gift you can give anybody. Talk about what interests them. Ask them to share something that they read recently that really enlightened them. Some of the best gifts devotees give me is just that we regularly talk about what we read in the Shastra. That's a lot more valuable than, you know, a new jacket. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much.
Kindness? Anybody else? Yes.
When you were talking about the understanding of the mood and the needs of others, especially in intimate relationships, when you know someone for a long time, there's sometimes this idea that you should already know what is my need and what is how to satisfy me, and then there's some kind of resentment if this person doesn't know and doesn't notice.
Mm.
I'm as a husband, I'm really like sometimes not good in this, and then I get just like
Well, the psychologists have said that especially women tend to be guilty of this more than men. That the women especially think that if you really love me, you'll figure out what I want without my having to ask.
Yeah,
and that if I have to ask, it diminishes the value of what you give me by at least 50%. So this seems to be a particular, peculiar psychology of women especially. What is that? It's even said in the scriptures that women have these kind of crooked up and down ways that that men who are attached to them find very attractive. So I think in the beginning, the fact that women are very mysterious and hard to figure out is very attractive to men. But then when you have to live with a woman, it may be a little difficult to figure this kind of thing out. I really don't know what you want unless you tell me. And you know, the people who give advice in relationships will generally tell women, men are not non-leaders. And, you know, he loves you just as much if you tell him what you need first. It's standard relationship advice for women is that don't ask your husband to guess at what you need and be angry at him when he guesses wrong. That's not fair. He's not God. Now, with Krishna, he can do that. We can have our relationship with Krishna where Krishna knows what we need. Even sometimes we don't know, you know. Sometimes Krishna gives us what we needed and we didn't even know we needed it. Haven't you had that experience? Krishna gives you something and you're like, wow, this was perfect. I didn't even know that this existed. But another jiva can't do. best that I can do for you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Can I close this computer? Oh, why don't I show you? Let me show you what I did here.